Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Okay, I'm going to give you some tough numbers here. 54 new confirmed deaths yesterday, more than 4,000 new cases, a 7-day average positive test rate above 7%. Just 4% of our non-surge ICU hospital beds are free in Boston as the post-holiday wave continues. We've had 140,000 people getting their first vaccine dose, and 1,200 have already gotten the second as the state's rollout continues. So that is where we stand right now on the coronavirus pandemic in Massachusetts. And so we're taking your questions. What do you need to know now? It's Ask the Doctors. Call us at 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now to help answer those questions, two good friends of the show, Dr. Helen Boucher, Chief of Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center and a professor at the Tufts University School of Medicine, and Dr. Joshua Barocas, an infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center and an assistant professor of medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine. Drs. Boucher, Barocas, welcome back.
Thanks so much, TC Allen.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to have you. I will tell you, the phone calls are coming in already. So I'm going to ask each a couple of questions, and then we will go to the phones. Are we, Dr. Boucher, do you think, in the height of the post-holiday surge, or is the curve still going upward?
Well, Tiziana, I think we're afraid that we still aren't quite to the peak of this surge upon the surge. So we've probably seen some of the post-Christmas business, but we still will be waiting for the post New Year's, and I think it'll be another week to two before we see that in full force.
Does that make you feel kind of sick to your stomach? I mean, does that feel a little overwhelming?
It does, and as I looked at the numbers, you know, yesterday and today, it's really sad that, you know, this has been so predictable, and that we're seeing just exactly what we hoped not to see. And I just pray that we don't get to the place where our hospitals are pressed to the limit, that we can't give the care that our patients deserve.
Dr. Barocas, how are things going at Boston Medical Center?
You know, I was looking at the numbers earlier today from BMC, and we have luckily sort of moderated a little bit. We're holding steady, a little bit of a plateau right now. Everyone is still safe, able to give care. But I think that I just want to reiterate what Dr. Boucher said, that it's just sad at this point. It just causes an overwhelming sadness in me, that everyone is still suffering and is also so exhausted throughout the city and the state and the country. It's just incredibly sad to me.
Are you too exhausted?
We have a steady flow of caffeine in our house. So I'm hanging in there. Thanks for asking.
I would say the same, Tiziana. You know, I am hopeful as we vaccinate more, and it was such a hopeful day yesterday as we began vaccinating first responders. We obviously need to go a lot faster, but knowing that the vaccines are here makes me very hopeful and that much more resolute that we need to double down on our mitigation measures and get people vaccinated as fast as we can, because that's how we're going to get to better days.
All right, so we have a ton of vaccine questions here already. Let's go to the phones, 800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK, to join this conversation. Peter's on the line from Cambridge. Peter, what's your question?
Thank you very much. My understanding is that the vaccines prevent illness, but not necessarily infection. So my question is whether it will still be possible after one is vaccinated to be tested for infection?
Okay, thanks for that question. Dr. Barocas, is that one you can answer?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question, and there's a lot of meat to unpack in that question. So first and foremost, both of the vaccines that are approved after the two doses that happen somewhere between 21 and 28 days apart, you as a vaccinated person should have a substantial amount of immunity, meaning you're protected. That said, it does not confer 100% immunity. It certainly doesn't confer 100% protection in the first 1 to 2 weeks after that first vaccine. So it's still possible, and we are seeing this on the ground, it is still possible to become infected in the period of time, first and foremost, between shot number one and shot number two. And even after that, it's still possible to much lower possibility, but it's still possible to become infected even after two shots. These are preventive, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're 100% effective. And that is why, that's one of the reasons why we still consider another tool in the prevention toolkit, which includes masks and distancing, hand washing, and all of those things that we've been talking about for the last number of months. It's just one more good tool.
So not a panacea there. So let's go back to the phones, 800-423-8255. Let's go to Gretchen in Needham. Gretchen, what's your question?
Yes, hi. I wanted to know if there was a Massachusetts task force in place to implement and oversee the vaccine process. Excuse me. And if so, who is in charge? And if not, why not have a sort of a central command in place? With a website that can provide information about the timing when one could get the vaccine, how to sign up, and what the where the location might be.
Thanks for that, Gretchen. Dr. Boucher, do you want to start with an answer on that?
Sure. Yeah, I'll give it my best shot. So indeed, there is a task force for vaccines, and it's they are accountable to the governor. It's headed up by Dr. Paul Bittinger from the Mass General Hospital, and it has representation of really outstanding physicians and others who understand how to implement vaccination. And there is a place on the mass.gov website where there are updates on vaccination. I think it is hard for us because it's going in steps and we're still waiting to see what the next step will be, right? So we started with healthcare workers and residents of long-term care facilities. And then yesterday began first responders, that's police, fire, EMTs. And then we understand that the next phase will be people above the age of 75. And I think that is on the website. I think what's a question is what comes after that, and of course, when.
So, and I'm just going to add to that, excuse me, we're going to link to the mass.gov site that the doctor was just talking about, Gretchen, on our website, radioboston.org, and you can see there the vaccination plan over time, where to get a vaccine, et cetera. I'll also just note, again, we're in the early stages, and in phase one, there isn't vaccination available to the general public. I know that there are still some questions about that. Before I go back to the phones, Dr. Barocas, I saw a conversation, actually, an interview in print with Dr. Paul Bittinger, who's the head of the task force, talking about what we do and don't know about the longevity of your, I don't know if immunity is the right word, I'm trying to be so careful with my language here, from the vaccine. And he was talking about 3 months, maybe, but maybe up to a year. We are relying a lot on being vaccinated to help keep us safe. So what do we and don't we know about the lifespan of the vaccination?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. What we know is based on the trial data that came out of the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine trials. And when those two companies put forth their application for the EUA, the emergency use authorization for those vaccines, we had 3 months of follow-up data. So many of us are knowing that we want to tread a very careful line, following the data as closely as we can. What we know is that these vaccines are effective up 2-3 months. And it's only because we don't have data beyond that point yet. Those trials are ongoing. They will still follow people. They're not obviously still enrolling, but they will still follow people who received the vaccine under the trial for the next 1 to 2 years. So we will get a good, we'll sort of get updated information on the longevity of that vaccine, of these vaccines over a period of time. But for right now, we know for certain, just based on the data, that it's that we have that immunity, that protection for 3 months.
So just to clarify, we know 3 months because that's as long as we've been able to measure and track so far.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. That is very helpful. 800-423-8255. It's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Tony on the line in Arlington. Tony, go ahead.
Hi. I'm wondering if you know anything about teachers and if they will get the vaccine before the public schools fully open. I'm a teacher in the Boston Public Schools, a kindergarten teacher, and I would sure love to get the vaccine before I'm required to go back.
So thank you for that call, Tony. I will say what I know just quickly and hand it to you, Dr. Boucher. I'm looking at the phase two chart here from the mass.gov website. Phase two includes early education and K-12 workers. That is logged as February through April as the time frame. Are we on track for that? Do you know, Dr. Boucher? And what else can you tell Tony, the teacher in Boston?
Yeah, well, so Tony, thank you for the work that you do. And I and many of us have been involved with helping the schools along the way, and I'm very excited for you to get back into the classroom. As Tiziana pointed out, currently teachers are in phase two. The CDC actually recommended moving teachers up a little bit, if you will, because they consider them to be like frontline workers because of the work that you do. Whether and how Massachusetts implements that is yet to be determined, but I very much hope that the vaccination will happen as soon as February. And you know, many of us in infectious disease and public health are advocating hard for that.
All right, the lines remain full, so let's go back for another call. Karen's on the line in Dorchester. Karen, go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep, go right ahead, Karen.
My question is, I did unfortunately have the COVID and I'm past my isolation time. And I know I'm immune for a few months, but my question is, can I still bring it to my grandchildren and my family members?
Thanks for that, Karen. Karen, first, before you go, how are you feeling? You feeling okay now?
Yes, but my daughter-in-law, who is a teacher that got it in the schools, she actually is not feeling well. She's 20 years younger than me, at least, and she's very fatigued. And I seem to have bounced back pretty good.
Well, I'm sorry for her, but I'm glad you bounced back. Dr. Barocas, Karen's question about her ability to still be contagious for her grandkids.
Yeah. Well, Karen, first and foremost, I'm sorry that you and your family are going through this. I'll say the best that we know is that if you've passed that isolation period of around 10 days, then we believe that you are, by and large, no longer truly infectious. This is based on a number of studies that have tried to grow the virus in people who have been infected at certain time periods in the future. So most likely you're not infectious. That said, I would still, this doesn't change anything. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't wear a mask. It doesn't mean that you still shouldn't be practicing a lot of those same preventive measures that we've talked about. And if I may, Tiziana, just to add on to the, because we are talking about the vaccine, and this is a question that's been coming up a lot of people who have had COVID and should they get vaccinated? The answer is, yes, you should get vaccinated. If you've had COVID, there are some timing issues that are still being worked out, and certain states do things differently. But broadly, yes, the answer is if you've recovered from COVID, you should still receive the vaccine.
Thank you for that. In fact, I saw a caller that had just started to pop up with that question. So you jumped ahead, which is great. The more questions we can get answered, the better. So let's get another caller here. Kate's on the line from Bridgewater. Kate, go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering what type of studies have been done and what is the safety factors and health risks for women who are pregnant or women who are trying to become pregnant with the vaccine?
Dr. Boucher.
Yeah, so very important question, Kate. So first and foremost, studies are just beginning now to in patients who are pregnant with the vaccine. So like many other medicines, they were studied first in people who are not pregnant. That said, there were a number of people who became pregnant during the trials, and we're watching those people are being monitored, as Dr. Broca said. So we'll have some data on the outcomes of those pregnancies over time. What we know with this particular technology and these vaccines is that there is no reason to believe that they're going to be dangerous. And the toxicology studies in animals were finished for one of the vaccines and came out, as they say, clean, with no evidence of any untoward events in those animals. The OBGYN societies have advocated strongly that the vaccines be offered to women who are pregnant and women who are nursing. And the official CDC and DPH recommendation is that these vaccines should be offered and they should be, the decision should be made in discussion between a patient and her obstetrician or other physician as to the risks and benefits for her.
Thank you for that. Let's try to grab one more here. We've got Margaret on the line from Somerville. Hi, Margaret, what's your question?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a similar twofold question that's similar regarding shedding of the virus following either a vaccination period or from someone who's recovered. And my question is, why can't we determine that by simply doing the PCR nasal swab on those people? And my second question is, if that's not feasible, what types studies are being done to follow people to determine if they are, in fact, still shedding the virus after they have been vaccinated or recovered?
All right. Thanks for that, Margaret. Dr. Barocas, last question goes to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are, those studies are ongoing. One of the difficulties doing that up front was simply part of that, those phase three trials, the last leg of the clinical trial process for these studies enrolled 43,000 to, or 30 to 43,000 people, depending on the study. And so essentially trying to determine what we would call forward transmission, your ability to transmit virus even after being vaccinated would have been well outside the scope of the study. That said, those studies are going on, and right now the best thing to do is assume that if you get the vaccination, you have some protection, but it does not, we definitely do not know right now if you're able to sort of harbor the virus and transmit. So better to be safe than sorry.
All right. That is as much as we have time for today. Dr. Helen Boucher, Chief of Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center and a professor at the Tufts University School of Medicine. Also, Dr. Joshua Barocas, an infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center and assistant professor of medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine. This is such a service to our listeners. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us and answer questions. Really appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.